Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Magician Nelson Lugo.
Hi, I'm Nerdcore rapper Shafa the Dark Lord.
We're best friends
who hate each other's guts.
And we co-host The Epic Podcast,
a monthly show in which we discuss comic books,
video games,
television,
movies,
our debilitating emotional problems,
and Batman.
So much Batman.
That's The Epic Podcast
on the Nerdy Show Podcast Network.
Be safe, internets.
Bye. Seriously, so much Batman.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. Welcome to Nerdy Show, a peculiar podcast dedicated to every facet of nerddom, from comics and video games to science and technology. If it's geeky, we have got it covered. Hello, I am Cap.
Hello, I am Brandon.
Hello, I am Boar.
Hello, I am John.
John is joining us today from the machine.
Welcome,
yes.
My son. Welcome to the machine.
The singularity has happened, and Jonathan has been uploaded to the cloud.
I mean, oh, so. It's like the rapture. I missed it. He was always going to be the first to ascend. There was never any doubt in my mind.
It's true.
What does it feel like in there, John?
Cold.
Yeah, but that's how you are
normally.
That's
strange. That sounds like a human feeling.
Trying to relate.
He meant emotionally cold. There is no emotion or feeling.
Just sort of existentially cold, not actually like I'm feeling cold, like frigid. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Checks out. Well, it's been about a month since a normal episode of Nerdy Show happened, if indeed any of our shows could be called normal.
The hell have you been doing?
Well,
the fuck have you been doing?
The ever perceptive Brandon Gerson. Well, let me tell you.
Where have I been? What have I been doing for a month?
I think you've been playing Fallout 76.
Not the whole time.
Well, Doug and Tony and I went to North Carolina Comic Con, and we recorded an episode on the way back from being there in the car, which was fun. And then we published, instead of a regular, normal Nerdy Show discussion episode, we published one of the panels that I did at North Carolina Comic Con on the subject of horror with Chris Ryall, who is the editor of Lock and Key, and Jeremy Whitley, who writes a lot of things like the Unstoppable Wasp, but most notably for that panel, Vampirella, a recent run of that comic that's not as cheesecakey as it used to be.
I don't know what Vampirella is.
Do you remember the 1990s in comic book stores where there'd be comics of sexy girls doing violent things? Like,
is it that woman with the large black hair and always has her boobs out and she's like really white?
No.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't know anything about her.
Well, me neither. I just know that it's basically a cheesecake comic, much like how...
I don't think that's what he was actually talking about.
What am I talking about, John?
I think you were talking about Elvira.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking about.
Okay, well, look, here's the thing. Virtually the same thing, but just action-adventure oriented.
Oh, okay. Got it. Done.
Okay, great. Well, hey, moving on. If you want to check out those episodes out, they're earlier in this feed than this episode, by only a little bit. So, since it's been such a very long time, what's everybody been up to?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Playing video games.
Yeah.
Sitting on my butt playing video games. Doing some school, but mostly video games. Several games have come out since the last time you recorded a podcast. I believe Red Dead Redemption 2 came out. And Super Smash Brothers came out. Ultimate. I think it's... Is it Ultimate? Super
have
Smash
you been
Brothers
playing
Ultimate?
That?
Well, no, I haven't. I haven't played Smash Brothers because the AC adapter for my Switch is on an airplane, so I can't charge my Switch until I buy
it. You think
another.
They left it on the airplane and they didn't take it off at some point when they were cleaning?
Oh, yeah. It's gone.
Well, it's living in it like a snake.
I shoved it so far down in the seat, no one will find it, including me, and it's been to more places in the world than I have at this point. So I need to spend another $30 on top of the $60 to play Smash Brothers.
That's fun. Yeah.
And I've been playing Fallout 76, and I was going to just display my opinions. I mean, not display them. Auditorily display my opinions. Is that a word?
Do you mean discuss?
Yeah, that's the word. Okay. Discuss is when it's like an opinion, but audio and not visual.
So
is that how that works? Really
discussion, is it?
Well,
fuck you.
I'm sure both you and John have a lot to say on the subject of Fallout 76.
I mean, Boar also plays the game.
Well, yeah. I played. I played it during the beta.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I did not actually pay money for it.
We don't need to talk about Red Dead Redemption 2 because everyone's like, oh, it's a pretty good game, whatever. It's been done. Everyone knows it's great.
We don't need to say anything about it.
It's a good game if you like it.
Okay.
I mean, even South Park went over how good it was.
Yeah, so it's pretty good.
Wow, that is extensive. We'll compartmentalize Fallout 76 into a segment a little later on in this episode, so look forward to that. John, how about you?
No, I mean, basically just Fallout 76.
All right, that segment's ever approaching. It's happening any minute now.
I'm already up to around 100 hours.
Oh, Jesus. Good grief. Boar, if you say Fallout 76.
So while we've got John here, it's actually a good thing because I wanted to give an update on how the pills have been going.
Oh, well, a little bit of a quick recap. If for some reason you're tuning in the middle of our 10-year-long discourse here on Nerdy Show.
It's only been a couple of months.
Several episodes back, John got everybody hooked on some pills that make your dreams vivid, give you life extension.
And
he's obviously in the computer realm now, whereas the rest of us are meat flesh. But before that, he was attempting life extension by virtue of some beneficial chemicals.
Where the fuck are my pills? I didn't get any pills.
You had
to purchase them. They were not included.
I spent my money on some other medical stuff, which we'll talk about soon.
I've just been using heroin.
Tell us about the pills, Boar.
So I finally...
How they popping?
The pills are popping great. I have been using them for a little over 2 months now.
Yeah,
and
that sounds about right.
They've been going great. Like, my mood is better. I feel like way more with it mentally. I'm not tired anywhere near as often. And those are pretty much the only benefits that I've seen so far. But so far, so good.
I mean, because the other benefits are like 70 years from now, if you were able to compare and contrast yourself between two separate timelines, you'd look and feel better in one of them.
Right, exactly. So,
okay, I'm going to need you guys to back the fuck up. What are these pills? Are you fucking with me? Are they real? What are they actually called? What the hell do they actually are supposed to be? What do they do? I can't tell this is a joke that I'm not in on.
John,
there are no pills
that will magically
make you feel good that isn't a drug or prescription drug.
Can you fill Brandon in a TLDR version?
Like the quickest way possible.
Just what's the name of them? I'll look that shit up.
Basically, we use two pills that are the same as this other pill, but cheaper because they're two separate things. And it actually
explains nothing.
Hold on.
It's all in relation to the core metabolic fundamentals that underline almost all life on Earth. Basically, it's the closest thing to like an actual real legitimate silver bullet we have for anti-aging drugs.
I didn't understand a word you said. I still don't know the name of the drugs or what it actually does.
Yo, spit some names up in this.
What was it? Terostilbene and...
nicotinamide riboside.
You get that from eating turkey.
Yeah.
Puts you to sleep.
The joke about it, the whole thing is anything with protein in it technically has some of it in it because any living cell does. So basically taking one of these pills is like eating a steak's worth of this drug without all that other bits and bobs.
Now, and over the past, since I started, I was playing around with different dosages and stuff, and I found out the hard way that if you take too many of them, you'll not have a good day.
What happens?
So I learned that if you take two of the true Niagen, which is the nicotinamide riboside, if you take two of those, the first day it was fine. And it says on the pill bottle, take two of these, but I'm pairing them with something else, which amplifies them. So, the first day is great. The second day you're like, wow, I have too much energy. What the hell is going on? The third day, I had like brain fog. I couldn't think clearly and I could not sleep. I stayed up for an entire 24-hour period. I had to wait for it to wear off. And then I didn't take it for about a day to like cleanse it out of my system a little bit. But then once I finally landed on one of each per day, oh my God, I feel way better.
Cool. Well, that's simple.
But that's not all. There's more. There's more to what's going on. I'm gonna move on from pills and go into pancakes.
I mean, hold up though. I mean, are we in a position where we should in fact be buying these pills generic and licensing them as our own?
Oh yeah. Well, we should combine them together into one nutraceutical.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think we should. We can charge triple. Look forward to Nerdy exactly Show anti-aging pills. Did.
I'm pretty sure it's just vitamin B3.
It might be.
Just add a tiny little bit of ginseng in there too, right?
I've worked with a lot of B vitamins in my time, and they all have wacky names when you look them up. Like riboflavin is like B7 or something, and then there's a bunch of ones that are just different names. And I'm pretty sure the one you guys have been eating is just large doses of vitamin B3 that you should not
be
eating.
But we feel great, Brandon.
Yeah, because vitamin B supplies energy. And it doesn't make you crash as much as, you know, speed will caffeine.
Hey, Brandon.
What?
Vitamin B's nuts. Oh!
My God.
What's the other pill? There's the Niagen, True Niagen.
We'll put the links in the episode's description, and you can read all about it later.
I'm going to put them in my urethra.
We had a whole episode about this, so we're not going to go into too much more detail. Yeah. But back to the pancakes. So I've been on a quest lately to make the... I've been wanting to replicate a pancake that I had in the past. It was a pineapple upside down pancake, and I think that I've come very close to it. Uh-huh. And it was probably one of the most delightful breakfast foods that I've ever made for myself in my lifetime. I'm having a structural integrity problem. on the flip, they're a little bit too cakey. They taste amazing, but I just wanted to brag about how great I am at cooking something delicious real quick.
Well, where did these originally find their way to your mouth?
I was in Michigan and at some little greasy spoon type diner. And I was like, pineapple upside down pancakes. I have to try that. And they were fantastic. And I finally took the time to replicate them. And,
right on.
And they're great. They're great. It's just like having pineapple upside down cake for breakfast.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Maybe once I figure out the structural integrity, we can post the recipe on Nerdy Show or something.
Oh, well, I mean, we've every now and then, resident Nerdy Show chef Crystal talks about, like, what if we did a cookbook? And I'm like,
maybe we should. I've got a lot of cool recipes.
I do too.
We typically, in terms of like the Nerdy Show store, the things that tend to sell are dice. So I don't know if people are going to want to buy a cookbook.
Well, have we tried a cookbook?
We have not.
You've sampled some of my recipes. You know how great they are.
We just have to start throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, you know?
Yeah. Nerdy Show YouTube cooking channel.
Well, we already have a whole microsode devoted to our failed experiment Adamantium Chef, which hopefully we'll resurrect someday, but that's
a lot. We had that bacon episode. I'm going to count that.
Many episodes back, months ago, we sliced into this Nerdy Show program that you're listening to right now, a small clip of my interview with Talking Heads frontman David Byrne when I was interviewing him about his film True Stories. So if that piqued your interest at all, that interview is finally out in full via Consequence of Sound on the titular Consequence of Sound podcast via the Consequence Podcast Network, which I also run. So that's out. It's fun. The new Criterion Collection edition of True Stories is out now. It's my favorite movie. I feel pretty strongly that it was an influence on Earthbound, aesthetically speaking, though I still haven't been able to confirm whether or not it had distribution in Japan or how it performed in home video sales in Japan to further corroborate that. I could also just straight up figure out a way to ask Shigesato Itoi, who created Earthbound. I don't know. But in the interview, a thing that you won't hear in the interview is when I asked David Byrne if he knew how it performed in Japan, specifically so I could find out if perhaps it did have an influence on Earthbound. And the answer is we still don't know because he didn't know. I also recently interviewed Janelle Monáe. By the time you're listening to this, the article may have been published on Consequence of Sound, but I don't know for sure that that is the fact, so I won't be able to say much about it yet. But it was very cool speaking with her. And if we can link to it, then I will link to it.
Did you ask her about her appearance on Stargate Universe?
You know, I didn't.
What the hell?
Well, there was just so much going on.
The only thing I would have even cared about.
Wait, was she on? Did she make a guest appearance on Stargate Universe?
Yeah, as herself.
Fuck, I don't remember that.
Yeah, like, what the hell?
The characters went to a concert that she was the headliner of.
But Stargate Universe?
Yes.
I mean, this has been a big year
Isn't
for
that
her.
The one where they're in a ship on the way between like galaxies or something really horrible?
Well, you need to watch the show to figure out how they would work in a Janelle Monáe concert.
Well, I'm assuming that they either did a flashback or some ridiculously high sci-fi like, oh shit, we're in an alternate reality dimension somehow.
You're
like
wrong
that one
on
time
all
they
accounts.
They wound up in the 1970s by going back through the beam near a solar flare.
It's probably just like a headset.
You're just completely wrong.
Anyway, her record from this year, Dirty Computer, is rad. The Emotion Picture, which you can watch on YouTube, is rad. It's a short film. And also Wonderland, the Wonderland Arts Society, which she's a part of, the sort of like creative conglomerate that develops all of her work with her. They just signed a exclusivity deal with Universal to make films. So they're going to be producing in the coming years a number of diverse stories made by diverse voices featuring diverse people, which is very, very, very fucking exciting. We're hopefully going to see some awesome Afrofuturist films aside from Black Panther. Not that there haven't been some out there, but they're, you know, just not as big or well-distributed productions along those lines. I've been producing a limited series on Consequence Podcast Network called The Opus, which is what's been kicking my ass the most the past month. It's co-produced with Sony. So we're working with Sony Music to create this this podcast. And the focus of it is every season is 4 episodes long, and those 4 episodes focus on a legendary record and exploring its continued relevance and how the narrative surrounding that music has continued to evolve over time. So the first one we did was Bob Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, and in January we're following it up with Jimi Hendrix's Electric Ladyland. I think it turned out wonderful, but it's been a huge ordeal. It's some of the most complicated editing that I've done in my career so far, and if I've done my job well, you won't be able to tell. But there's a lot of reconfiguring of like when you get presented with these hour long interviews that you need to cull down into less than 30 minutes of content, and like and the people will be talking in winding ways, and you have to sort of stitch together completely disparate conversations that are about the same thing. It turns into this whole like timeline editing thing in your head, and you start to feel very crazy. I'm like totally burnt out right now. I mean, like I took a full blown day off yesterday. I didn't touch any kind of work.
You don't take days off.
I sat down and I read Madeline Lee Angle's Wind in the Door in one sitting. Like just
reading is not a day off. Reading is hard work for me. Maybe for just me, but
it was very pleasurable.
Ugh, reading words on pages.
I sat down and I just read a book. I didn't care about anything else.
Any pictures? In the book? Book?
There's this one part that shows
any QuickTime events?
There was a zigzag line in the book.
Was there dinosaurs or dragons?
Well, if you're not familiar with A Wind in the Door, it's the sequel to A Wrinkle in Time. And The one with Oprah, yes.
And it did horrible in the box office.
Maybe. I don't know what it did. I mean, at the box office, perhaps, but I don't know what it did in home video. But it was not perfect by any means. But I think it could do good anyway, and it was very lovely, the film. But I think I discussed that on a prior episode. Anyhow, there are dragons, kind of.
Oh, well, then it at least gets a point in my book.
Charles Wallace.
Space dragons.
Well, it's actually Charles Wallace, the young boy who's like vaguely psychic to a degree. He believes he's seen a dragon, but it was really something quite complicated that he only perceived as being a dragon being the best explanation.
So it's not a real dragon.
Well, what he saw was a mass of eyes and wings and flames and feathers that were also scales that he assumed was a cluster of dragons, but in fact was what our human brains would commonly mythologically perceive as a cherubim.
Not, I don't know what that is.
Not the little cute angel babies, but like the like biblical like fuck mess of crazy
of
imagery.
Eyes and wings of eyes shit and wings. You know, yeah. I have a magic card, I think, that has one of those. I'm just saying. It's a great fucking car. It can resurrect things. Anyway.
So it's a very, very cool story about darkness and love and doppelgangers and existential quandaries and the scale of the universe and the like both very small and extraordinarily large and perception. And I'd read it 2 other times, but this time really sank in. And I mean, it always sunk in. It's a pretty influential book for me, but I came away with only like a handful of the totality of the ideas that are in it. So it was a good experience and it was a great day off. And what else? I've been getting my face lasered.
like just to burn it, just for fun. Like, oh, I want a fucking hole in my face. Just fucking laser it. Or you mean like hair, like follicle removal?
Yeah.
You gotta be more specific.
Laser hair removal, yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you get to keep it when you're done? Because like when you go to the dentist and they take your teeth sometimes.
You just get a pile of
hair. They don't let you keep your fucking teeth because it's a biohazard. So granted, it's my fucking teeth. How is it a biohazard?
Hair.
What?
It uses lasers on the hair. The lasers go into the hair and then the hair goes explosion.
The hair just explodes. I thought they stopped using laser. I thought they used a little electronic like shocks to remove follicles.
There's electrolysis and there's laser hair removal. And they're two separate things that for two different hair types. I was evaluated to have a pretty good hair type being with light skin and darker hair for laser hair removal, which is easier and I think less expensive. Electrolysis is where they have to put a little needle down in the follicle and zap it that way.
That sounds like it takes a long time.
It does sound like it takes a long time.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, go for it.
Recently, because I'm getting old, I've got so much hair in my balls now that you can do one of those cool Scottish braids on it and make it really thick.
Nice.
So about how much do you think it would cost to get that removed with lasers? Is this something that you need to take out a fucking healthcare plan for or a loan? Like $1,000 a hair? Or is it something like $500, everything's gone for like 6 months?
It's considered it's aesthetic, so most insurances I assume would not cover it.
Excellent.
And it's mostly like how much time they spend.
Per hour.
Yeah, a session for my face will cost around $200 a pop.
Dang.
Yeah, it's not.
How
it's,
long
it's not
does
cheap.
It last so that you don't have to do it again?
Oh, forever.
In between sessions. Oh, forever?
Yeah.
But one day you're like, I want to grow a beard for no reason.
Well, you got to commit.
Okay.
Hormone replacement therapy doesn't alter my facial hair. I'm stuck with that unless I do this. So
you got to commit.
So I, you know, facial hair is a burden and a nuisance, and my skin's really sensitive, and like shaving it all the time is shit.
Shaving does suck.
So
I mean, I've thought about getting my beard lasered off because I wear masks so much and it just interferes with forming a perfect seal.
You wear masks so much?
Like, I mean, don't we all wear masks?
It's very true.
Why do you wear masks?
Yeah, why are you wearing masks?
Are you murdering people?
I mean, I didn't really care until you put one on, but
you guys never go into situations where you need to put on face masks?
No.
He's a science boy.
And snorkeling and scuba diving, all those things.
Oh, I was... Hey, John is a venture brother, okay?
I was picturing... I was picturing a scuba diving
venture.
You ever had a rusty venture?
So I mean, it is very practical, and there's it's just expensive, but also long run, like, you know, you eventually you buy enough razors and enough creams and so on and so forth and Band-Aids from when you gouge out your flesh. You know, then eventually it'll catch
it'll
up.
It'll save you money in the long run.
So you have to do multiple sessions. So like, it's been a month since I did my first session, so I'm going back in for another session, which is why I've got like I'm not done yet. And then you got to get like I got to pick up like spares, you know, like see like, oh, did we miss anything?
Are you gonna do the legs? I mean, obviously you're gonna do everything at some point.
No,
you're gonna be like a nice like fucking smooth seal, like a smooth baby walrus,
loose seal.
I mean, yeah. that's a lot of fucking money. That's a ton.
I mean, over time, not all at once, you know. Like, if you had the money, you would be like, dip me in a vat of Nair.
I mean, look, I have...
Cut me full of lasers.
I have nothing against body hair, and I feel that, like, that no one should be uncomfortable with it, but, it, you know, it's an aesthetic decision to have it or not. You shouldn't feel any societal pressure towards that. And I do not feel that one way or another, except for that I will be misgendered constantly.
See, there was a time in my life where I'd love to not have any facial hair, but then I realized... that having some facial hair makes me not look as horrible because my face sucks. So
you
I
got
like
a cute little face,
I like,
Brandon.
No, I like covering it with some fur, but not too much that I look homeless.
Have you tried covering it with a mask?
You know, that's your solution to everything, John. Put a fucking mask on it.
God.
Gonna have sex, better put a mask on. Fucking gonna rob a bank. Wait, you don't have a sex mask? That's the one part where I was like, oh, okay.
Going to a funeral, better put my fucking mask on. Jesus, John.
Because John's pretty active in the bedroom. Sex mask, obviously.
He's got a sex mask.
So is it more like a samurai kind of like Oni mask, or is it like a fetishy zipper mouth mask?
The long nose from the Oni, so...
Well, I mean, that completely depends on the day.
That's a Tengu.
Is it like a plague doctor mask, or...
You have your funeral plague doctor mask, and then you have your fun, sexy, paper mache clown mask for, you know, the parties.
How
do you get a good seal on a paper mache mask?
Not very well, but you can.
I don't feel like your beard's going to come into play on that
one. You got to use water jets for the rubber, though.
Well, here's how you get a good seal. You go to a thrift store and you buy as many copies of Seal's records 1 through 3 as you can on CD, and you take the booklets and you use those to get a good seal on the mask.
And then you just have to finish it off with a kiss from a rose to be able to
touch on it. Did you know, unrelated but sort of related, there's an entire panpipe rendition.
You screwed it up. You said, did you know? And then you were supposed to follow up with, when it snows.
No, I'm not going to quote lyrics from the fucking song.
You just missed opportunity, Brandon.
Wow, that made my eyes become large.
I hate the song, so I don't even want to quote it.
Well,
it doesn't even make sense. The song doesn't make fucking sense. I mean, I guess it sort of makes sense, but it's dumb.
It was a good part of that film, Brandon.
And it was in fucking Batman Forever.
And as John said, it's the only good part of that film.
Oh.
Well, now the light that you shine can't be seen. So we're going to have to move on.
Fucking dumb, Seal. Get some new material.
Anyway, yeah, I'm just going to do my face. I'll let you know if I'm doing anything else.
But your eyelashes and your eyebrows look really fucking creepy.
That, yeah, it's a good idea.
How much for the virtual alopecia plan?
I'll just do chemo. How about, yeah? You know, just
not, no, because it can
not
grow back.
Not necessary chemo, just aesthetic chemo.
Oh yeah, that's a thing.
I hope it's never a thing. That's a terrible thing.
Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
I mean, we already take flesh-eating bacteria and inject it in our face, so why not? Why not? Fucking chemo. It's probably safer than botulism.
That's not quite what happens there, but it's
you're
close
not
enough.
Quite what happens. Why don't you put on your sex mask and get back in the fucking bedroom and wait for me?
At least you'll be protected when the tear gas comes.
From the tears that I cry.
In nerdy show related production news, obviously Call of Cthulhu is still coming out every other week. Every week that we're not putting out one of these shows, there's a Cthulhu.
And that Kenneth Rogers is fantastic.
Yes, makes such. We could do a Kenneth Rogers rotisserie chicken recipe.
Oh, that would be good.
Oh, he can be in the new movie.
I'm gonna have
to
brush
writing.
Up on my chicken skills.
Wait, you mean you were playing a character that wasn't real?
Yeah.
God damn it.
I'd probably sous vide a chicken. I don't know how to properly roast one.
Well, John sous vide a turkey for Thanksgiving, and John, I know I've said this enough, but once again,
it was great.
I didn't even sous vide it. That one wasn't even sous vide.
What?
How did you make the turkey so tender?
It was so soft. It was like eating a meat cloud.
The answer to that is restaurant supply stores.
Oh, I want a meat cloud. What the fuck's a meat cloud? It sounds delicious. It's so light and flaky.
Well, that's actually a euphemism for fart.
Oh.
So those turkey breasts actually came in a oven bakeable bag where you effectively just cut an inch in the top, put it in for the timer, and then yank it out.
Well, my compliments to the robot chef because it was heavenly.
Did you do something like that with the mashed potatoes too? Or is that were the potatoes a lie?
John right there.
Oh, hey, we were all at Thanksgiving together. All of us.
Yeah. Remember that time?
It's so unusual that would be the case. But it was.
I brought 6 cans of cranberry sauce, the jellied stuff.
Cranberry tower.
And no, Brandon made
mountain,
a jelly.
Cranberry mountain.
Yeah, Brandon made cranberry mountain out of them.
Surprisingly, most people didn't even touch. I tried some of it.
I ate 3/4 of a can by myself because nobody else was touching it. So I was like, I'm going to just go ahead and eat this mountain.
John, you also made
cranberry.
There was an
asinine amount of cranberry.
It's 7 different types of cranberry sauces people brought. and that's why I was getting on John's case about please bring turkey. You're the only one who can bring meat. No one else is listening to me. And then you save Thanksgiving, John, by bringing meat when no one else would. Thank you, John.
Every year we have to have something in excess. This year it was cranberry. Last year everybody made mashed potatoes.
What's next year?
Well, I don't know. Maybe everybody will make a meat.
Or jello.
It'll be green beanageddon.
It's the yampocalypse.
I'm gonna put turkey chunks in lime aspic.
Yes,
it's gonna be great.
I mean, that's in the recipe book as well as the
everything has lime jello.
Aspic. Yeah, that sounds like that would make my teeth go gray. It's just...
Other nerdy show things. So for those of you who support us on Patreon, we do release early Call of Cthulhu episodes. We're going to be releasing them a little bit more down to the wire because we decided to splurge and actually commission a little bit more original score for the season. So we're waiting on that. That's the big clincher there. But we'll get them to you as soon as they're done, you will have them. Also, we recently concluded the recording of season 3 of Ghostbusters Resurrection. It is all recorded. All the
Unbelievable.
Episodes. Like, several years later, it is done, and we will begin releasing them next year.
All right, I'm going to start episode 1, because I haven't listened to any of it yet.
You've
so
got
I'm going to
go.
I'm going to go.
Yeah. It's good. It's cool. I co-wrote season 3 with Doug. We had a really great time designing scenarios and creatures and creating all kinds of really remarkable and I feel innovative ways to fuck with our cast to produce the most incredible improvised storytelling.
If I don't give a shit about Ghostbusters, will I still enjoy it?
Well, sure. I mean, you can get invested in the characters. It's chaos. It's mayhem. And hold on. Let's get back to the part where you don't give a shit about Ghostbusters.
I mean, it's all right. It's all right.
All right.
I mean, I liked the really terrible animated one.
Oh,
the Filmation
God.
One?
Yeah, whichever one wasn't the real Ghostbusters.
The one with the gorilla.
Yeah, that one with the fucking gorilla.
Filmation's that, Ghostbusters.
And then I liked the one with the guy.
That's a complicated thing there.
The guy in a wheelchair and the goth girl.
Extreme Ghostbusters, yes.
Extreme. They were great. But then you get into the movies and everyone has like decent, like the first two movies, everyone's kind of like a decent actor and the jokes are clever and the music's brilliant and you're just like, oh. Give me another Marvel and DC movie any day. So not for me.
That's a good film review.
Practical effects, get the fuck out of here.
Hey, we just mentioned Patreon recently, and we're probably around the middle of the episode before we start talking about Fallout 76. And also, I have a dream to share.
Oh, that's been a while.
Oh, it's going to take an hour.
Oh, we'll see.
If you took
see.
The same pills that John and I took, then you know maybe you'd have dreams more often.
Does anyone
to talk
have
about.
These pills, and I have some right now?
Not.
I want to have dreams again.
I don't typically bring pills with me.
Anyhow, so we have a lot of new patrons, actually, like quite a few. And I am so very thrilled to be able to welcome them to the Nerdy Show party.
Kellen Lester and Michael Valley.
I also have names. Lyle B. Kimball and Donovan Meeks.
And I've got a new patron not available.
What?
I don't know. Someone's name on Patreon is N/A, not available. We also have Matt Connor from North Carolina Comic Con, who's a very kind soul and is now supporting us on Patreon. Thanks, Matt. There are lots of cool perks like early releases of any content we have that's out, that's ready early. You can get it.
Yeah, they were getting the new episodes of Call of Cthulhu like multiple weeks before they were out.
Yeah, at least the first several episodes, yeah.
But patrons got to dive in way early.
Yeah, and if we're able to catch up to the music we've commissioned, then that's going to be the case for the final episodes as well, in theory anyway. So go to patreon.com/nerdyshow and you'll see all the different perks, all the different tiers, all the different things you can access. And every little bit does count. So even if you have a dollar to donate, but you like what you like our programs, please do consider supporting us. We are, in fact, starving artists. Aside from the fact that, yes, I do realize that I just said I'm spending hundreds of dollars on facial hair removal. I do recognize that. However,
starving.
I've been saving up for that for like a year.
You millennials, if you stop buying your avocado toast and laser hair removal, you could afford that house.
Oh, does anybody have any avocado toast?
I could use it. I don't want to pay my rent this month. I need avocado toast.
You can also support us by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. Getting the word out in any way, shape, or form is awesome. Now, this program, Nerdy Show, we've been a lot of things over the years. We're about to enter our 10th anniversary year. We don't even really know what that means yet. We've got a lot of, we kind of have bigger fish to fry, quite frankly. Like, we're doing programs that are well outside the purview of...
I think you just came up with the perfect idea right there. The 10th anniversary Nerdy Show Fish Fry.
What did I say?
We've got other fish to fry.
Oh.
So,
okay.
Obviously, our 10th anniversary is a fish fry. Everyone's invited.
Yeah, yep. Come on down to Orlando, Florida. You come to the Nerdy Show studio. We're gonna stink it up with grease, and we're going to fry a lot of fish. Mostly cod.
But if you take any home, you can't take it to work and then microwave it in the work microwave.
It's ill-advised,
That is the worst thing that you could possibly do with leftover fish.
I'm going to tell everyone to do that. I'm going to hand out a little pamphlet saying what to do with your leftover fish. Microwave it at work. I'm gonna do that.
We'll do a little like IKEA style pictographic representation. We don't want to assume that everyone's speaking English, so we just need to show them with images.
I'm also gonna
definitely microwave their cod. Let me finish up the rating and reviewing thing. So please do jump in, rate and review. And if you do, then we will read it here on the show. For example, Kausa Baloo chimed in and reviewed our North Carolina Comic Con episode, North Carolina Comic Con X Innocent Target. She said, "Do you like listening to podcasts in cars? How about listening to cars in podcasts? Fortunately," there was a question mark there, for the auto nerd in you, "this episode of Nerdy Show lets you do both at the same time. It's a good time listening to the group's adventures at NC Comic Con while they're driving home from it. If there's one downside, it's that we don't get to hear more stories of Cap's experiences as a panel member and how it compared to being a panel host. Well, I can briefly say that it's just more relaxed when I don't have to worry about being the one asking the fucking questions. It's nice to sit back and like I'm doing for 10 years, I'm the one doing the interviewing, and only on very rare occasions is someone interviewing me. When the shoe's on the other foot, that's kind of fun."
Let's do that next episode. We'll interview you. We'll sit over there and Bor and I will just ask you the hard questions.
Oh, okay.
Well, about your life, about your family, everything. We'll get to the root of you.
Well, Podchaser did actually publish they did a long interview with me, and it didn't end up in an interview format, but they published a little like piece on me as a podcast professional, which is cool because that's never happened before in all this time. So hey, rad! I'm a personality now. I get interviewed now. Ha!
Someday I'll have a personality.
Oh, no. Brandon, you gotta
dream on
substantial.
No. Oh, I need those pills.
You gotta
to dream on.
You got a girthy personality. Hey, good segue. Okay, let's talk about dreams. In the past, when I've shared weird dreams that I've had on the show, they've generally had a narrative structure. I have a lot of very narrative-driven dreams. This one's a bit more conceptual. It's a bit bizarre, and feel free to interrupt and ask questions and so on. So the thing that it ended with, when I woke up in this kind of tense, weird dream, the idea came to me as like, this is like an X-Files episode, and if it was an X-Files episode, it would be called Double Mumbo Jumbo.
Sounds like a Venture Brothers episode.
There's a reason for that, but we'll get to it. And I'll just read what I've written here because it's kind of complicated. But again,
should I get some popcorn? Like, this is gonna be a nice long one, like a movie epic quality of dream.
Well,
that
like I said,
describe?
It's not narrative.
Okay.
not in any conventional sense, anyway. So you take stories about people having extraterrestrial visions, hinged on inanimate objects becoming something more, strange trees or ominous lamppost silhouettes. Things that become the kind of humanesque but abstract, childishly doodled forms from, say, older abduction encounter documents. The existence of these unassuming objects in real life acts as a deterrent for anyone believing the people who saw something more. So in the dream, in these terrains that are a lot like rural spaces in wintertime, there'd be trees that would manifest into these abstract beings that would be speaking to a human being who would be in awe and mostly terror of what they were encountering. And I was feeling all this, like feeling their terror in energy in these experiences.
And they were trees.
They were all kinds of stuff. They were like a tree, a fractured tree bark next to a telephone pole alongside a dirt road. Like, and that shape, that silhouette at nighttime would manifest into something sinister. Like say, I mean, I've never done any hallucinogenic drugs of any kind, but, you know, you often hear stories about shapes or shadows or things becoming something else. And it's like that. It's like, just a collection of shapes becoming a monstrosity of some kind. But in this case, something that the people who are witnessing it believe is extraterrestrial. So when they say with all certainty that, you know, like, no, this thing was right here, it spoke to me, and all anybody sees is a tall, dead tree trunk that has a slight resemblance to what they're describing, their words are immediately disavowed in spite of the, you know, you can tell this person truly felt terror, but obviously they're just crazy. There's something wrong with them. And what's more, these people now have what are referred to as protective utterances. I don't know if that's a real thing. It's just something, some terminology that I got after the dream. So they're like spastic murmurings, filling the gulfs of silence in between words, and most importantly, thoughts. They're gibberish that they develop that makes them assuredly seem crazy. Because then you have this person telling you about this great shape or whatever, and they're saying like, oh, well, nevseba makala, boof, ah! And like, they'll just like...
Speaking in tongues.
Yes, exactly. So, The next sentence was, these words that are they're no language, like speaking in tongues, have a power that these people intuitively need to shield them from these things coming to life again, or others like them appearing. So, like, they feel that if they use these terms, they are effectively, like, warding off these beings. The mania of these people is engineered. It's guaranteed, because no rationally minded person would believe anyone of any background who had any experience like this. But the X-Files-ness of it all is exactly this point. So, but like in the dream, forces are communicating to these people with these bizarre abstract shapes that become creatures and so on. These extraterrestrials are at least how they process the information. They're not necessarily extraterrestrials, but they are messages from other planes or other forces. The aliens are magic, and the brain is the receiver picking up signals from the invisible world. What makes the occurrences so scary is that it's happening within the scope of a person's own mind, a hologram played through the home system of their being, their meat. It's so radically different that it's terrifying to process, perhaps even pushing the limits of what our human hardware was made for.
And you're sure that you've never done any drugs?
I was about to ask. Yeah, you're not on anything.
This is a dream, totally
uninformed. How did you get all of this information once you woke up? You're like, I remember all of this, and I'm writing it down.
I just started writing it down. I mean, it was one of, it's one of those rare moments where you wake up and you're like, shit, that was fucked up. Here go my fingers, typing it all away. Like, you know, like.
I have had a few vivid dreams where I remember to this day and can recount perfectly, but that, you're on some next level fucking shit.
And no pills. I mean, you know, like, no, this is not informed by, I can tell you what
it's
I was
just, someone's not slipping pills into your drinks at night.
So in a different context, this would be a religious experience, but either because of the forces at play, or the individual in question who's experienced these things, or perhaps the intent of the messenger from beyond, it's a waking nightmare that can forever change the receiver. Because once they experience this, the shock to their system is so severe that they can't really bounce back. They start incorporating protective utterances into their words, like a curse to ward off demons. On paper, it means nothing, and they may rationalize it and say, oh no, it's a secret language, or it's an Atlantean tongue. Like, that's what these things are, but there's no patterns or elements that hint to any truth to that. But it does work in the dream. It does work the way they think it does. It does, in fact, ward off these forces, because it's a defense mechanism they've created, and they've created a narrative to fill in the blanks for the stuff that they can't explain. The mind has invented this language to occupy parts of itself so it can't be taken advantage of again. So these effectively, for whatever the reasons of it are, these become magic words, words that are talismans. They're using the principles of magic to wire up their own homemade defenses from forces from beyond, but it makes them look crazy.
Basically, it's a denial of service attack on your own brain to keep people from accessing it.
Yeah, exactly. That's such a good comparison.
Chapter 2.
So the double mumbo jumbo component of it all, double mumbo jumbo is a term that's used for when you combine magic and science in a story to where it doesn't work.
Isn't magic just really advanced science that you just can't comprehend yet?
Well, I mean, I think
in your dream, it's actually legitimately magic.
I believe that the reason that the Marvel Cinematic Universe didn't embrace magic as a component of it early on was because they were worried about audiences freezing up at a double mumbo jumbo situation. They had to work them up to it. So this is in the X-Files plot sense of it. It's that this starts out as aliens, then becomes magic and unexplained forces from beyond. It could be demons or angels. It could be authentically extraterrestrial messages that we can't process because the extraterrestrials themselves are coming from some kind of other, like, existence that we can't really wrap our heads around. Or it could even be garbled government attempts at MKUltra mind control that broadcasts so unclearly that it drives people crazy. The methods that's used by the human mind to process this impossible data is all the same, and the investigators in an X-Files scenario have to embrace this logic to save themselves. There was sort of a scenario that took place, a brief narrative component in all of this that happened towards the end, where my, like, sort of the avatar that was, you know, occupying for that component of the narrative started making these protective utterances. It felt, and it felt totally natural doing it. And I could feel it working. I could feel the gibberish words, in fact, preventing the visions from appearing to me, preventing me from having to firsthand experience these horrifying scenarios, preventing this eerie dream from becoming a nightmare.
Did you watch an episode of X-Files right before you went to sleep?
Here's what I watched before I went to bed.
Luc Besson's
Lucy.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder your brain was fucked up. That movie don't make no sense.
Well, it does in a weird way. I feel like it's...
If you suspend all belief. Well, disbelief.
Well, here's the thing. Luc Besson's Lucy is like, you take the cerebral elements of, say, his film Big Blue and then mash it up with his most base scripts that he's ever written. So, like, you have stupid, pointless gunfights and then also this, like, dialogue about the nature of existence. But all the while, not explaining things. Like, because the premise of Lucy, Lucy's the film, if you'll recall, where Morgan Freeman's like, we only use 10% of our brain. Like,
this drug unlocks all of it.
Yeah.
And we've proved, even when that movie before it came out, we proved that was bullshit.
Well, it's not that it's bullshit precisely. It's that the context is bullshit. It's that we use all of our brain, but we don't use all of it simultaneously.
It's not optimized and for efficiency.
No.
Here comes science, John. Yeah. Take it away, John.
Blind me with science, please, John.
In the singularity. Keep going.
The signal is relevant. Signal requires silence to be a signal at all. Otherwise, it's all noise. So essentially, just patterns going through the mind. In other words, the stops in between words matter. So
are we talking about protective utterances now? Or are we talking about the premise of the Luc Besson film Lucy?
What I'm saying is that the mind actually is doing everything that it's supposed to be doing all the time. Every bit of it has some sort of a value, but if you had them all firing at the exact same time, it would be of absolutely zero use to you.
Well, if they all fired at the same time, wouldn't you just like have a stroke and burn up or do some Parasite Eve shit?
I'm assuming that there would be something closer to a Parasite Eve shit. But yeah, basically the whole point is that it's the important part of the brain is the patterns of information going through it. Patterns require it firing or not firing. Not firing is just as important as firing.
Yeah. Now see, the film was missing that. It was missing like a lot of things. It's
everything.
Full of holes. Now there's some cool parts of it, but it is a broken movie sort of. But you can enjoy it. But I feel like it was Luc Besson's bizarre attempt at an action adventure version of the psychological thriller horror film Altered State, which is like, what if you went inside a sensory deprivation tank and it turned you into like a primal human being? Because in this case, Lucy is not just Scarlett Johansson's character's name, but it's also referencing the fact of like the nickname for the first, you know, human like entity.
It's pretty on the nose, like, I think.
It is.
I thought Lucy was a remake of Powder.
No.
I think Powder did it better. Powder evolves and uses more and more and more of its brain until he becomes like pure energy. Doesn't that happen in Lucy?
So they used pills in that?
It was not pills. It was It was a blue powdery crystal substance.
We're talking about Lucy, not Lucy. Powder.
Yeah. Yeah, Lucy. She is
so a drug.
She's forced into being a drug mule, and then
a guy
tries to rape her, and then she like puts up a fight, and so he kicks her in the guts.
Well, I don't need the whole movie.
We're doing movie reviews now. We've done a book club episode and a movie review episode in this one episode.
We're packing a lot in this.
Everybody knows that it's not drugs that unlock the full potential of your brain. It's a tumor in your brain that has little tendrils that go all through it, and
they activate weird dormant parts that you don't normally
use. Yeah, it creates a weird phenomenon in your brain.
Mm. Well, here's the weird thing about Lucy is that as she grows to like to get access to more and more of a percent of brain usage within the conceit of the film, regardless of what the reality of science is, she starts to develop psychic abilities, reality warping abilities, time manipulation abilities, all these different bizarre abilities that showcase that somehow and for reasons they never even attempt to explain, her having access to more processing power within her own mind enables her to warp reality around her at will, which I think was the unspoken intention of Luc Besson in this instance, and maybe I'm putting words in his mouth, I don't know, was that reality is a simulation that we all collectively are creating, like we are agreeing upon the parameters of reality. So then once we have like unlocked more of our mind, we're able to warp it in,
like
our
the Matrix, except you're not physically in a reality, virtual reality. You're making the reality
right,
around
this
you.
This is the Matrix is reality.
It's a collective reality that everyone is making.
Yes.
What if you're the only one who's making it and we're all just figments of you making it? And there's no way for you to prove otherwise. I'm not even here.
That plus a lot of other elements, I feel, informed my capacity to have this dream. There were a lot of other things that have, I mean, like, this dream is not an original idea, but the way it was presented to me was so visceral and potent that I was able to develop an understanding of the reality of people experiencing things like this that I didn't have. I only had in suggestion, but not in experience. Like, for example, John and I both watched a documentary, which I can't remember the name of, off the top of my head. I'll look it up. It's about a man who's been painting these bizarre erotic extraterrestrial abduction narratives. I knew that it was going to go somewhere into the erotic zone.
That was a weird
thing. Here. We've arrived. It's a really fascinating documentary. This guy is a wonderful artist, and the things he's painting are from as far as he's certain, like certain with complete conviction that these are things that happened to him, and he has been having an on again, off again love affair with an extraterrestrial entity.
And he's painting this.
And he's painting the narratives. It's helping him to remember these things that are like that slipped through the cracks of reality.
I'm imagining just someone having sex with an alien and drawing a painting.
Yeah, no, it's basically a gray with a wig. Practically.
It's called Love and Saucers, and it's a fantastic documentary, and I highly recommend it.
I mean, the guy's probably crazy.
It's follows 73-year-old Hoboken man David Huggins, who claims to have had a lifetime of encounters with extraterrestrial creatures, including forming a romantic relationship and losing his virginity to one.
Oh, his art. Ooh, nice.
Right?
No, has he always been drawing this, or when he just got old, a tumor developed and
Here's
made him crazy?
Here's what happened, Brandon. He was going along, and he had a completely normal life. Then one day, he starts having these memories come back. And that's
So the dude had a stroke, and I feel really bad for him.
Right. So aliens. Whether or not, you know, he started wind up having, like, some sort of bizarre memory creation as an effect of that, you know. But yeah, I would say that's basically it. He was completely ordinary, and then something happened to him.
He smelled burnt toast, and all of a sudden, he remembers the aliens.
I mean, that's the logical answer to it, right?
Happens to all of us.
Logical answer, but there might not be a logical answer to it.
Nonetheless, there it is.
I mean, like, but it's a beautiful way to like experience like his reality is different from our reality. Like that, there's no our perceptions of reality are exclusively how we as individual like collections of electronic pulses are experiencing the world through the configurations of our meat hardware. Like we won't perceive colors or tastes the same way. We are effectively weird little diving suits in this reality experiencing
we're little
things.
Bags of meat.
Yeah, exactly.
Going around doing little meat bag things.
We're all different and we're all experiencing it in different ways. So what is and isn't reality is completely subjective from individual to individual. And I feel that was at the heart of this dream, or one of the many things at the heart of it. But it was fascinating. Like, because these are the sort of things where, like, you know, as a child, this would have been a nightmare. But instead, it was just jarring.
The documentary, or what happened to him?
No, the dream that I had.
Oh, okay, I was like, what?
We're still analyzing Cap's psyche.
But I'm really grateful for these experiences and these opportunities to experience things in new ways. I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but you know, like,
well,
I think
you already wrote the first chapter of your novel. You got it done. You just read it to us in audiobook format.
There's no narrative component, but maybe, you know, maybe I could turn it into an audio
drama.
It's
the prologue. You know, it's the prologue.
Narrative components overrated.
Like there's a definite opportunity to use this experience as a scaffolding for creating an audio drama or some kind of other story, and doing more of that is really, like, folks, like, let me be frank about things. I'm so fucking done with being a journalist. I'm so over it. Like, I'm tired of reporting on other people's like art. I've always been dedicated to making my own, and as a result of like of my job, like, I have not been able to do that successfully. Like, doing Call of Cthulhu and doing these other narrative projects is extremely fulfilling, and I'm going to be doing more of that. Like, I love talking with other creators. I love talking with David Byrne. I love talking with Janelle Monáe. I love doing stuff like that, but like, I'm, you know, and I love hanging out.
So
I love
found,
talking about video games.
You
but,
have found what makes you fulfilled in life.
Well, I've always known what made me fulfilled
in life.
Can we do
me next?
Yeah.
Can we find out what makes me enjoy life? Because so far it's nothing.
Well, Brandon, when you
I want to know what makes me fulfilled. Is it eating a hot dog? Maybe.
Well, what was the plot you pitched me earlier this afternoon with the
what? Too Full, Too Furious?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Well, it's just a stupid. We were gonna make a movie called Too Full, Too Furious. And the idea was, obviously, it's a parody of Too Fast, Too Furious, if you couldn't get the gist.
You're going to start with a sequel?
Yeah, and we...
Well, it was going to be a sequel to the Food Crawl episode of Nerdy Show.
Yeah, but then it evolved into, like, a movie script where they're just going to hire, like, 7 or 8 of, like, these really good, like, world championship food eating contest winners. I don't know what they're called. Like, you've got, like, the skinny little Asian guy who can eat, like, 1,000 hot dogs, and they all go on a heist together. And they're just all food eating championships.
And but not a bank heist. I suggested to Brandon like the Haribo gummy bear recipe, and he was like, "Oh, well, okay." But then they find out the recipe is not at the corporation; it's in the owner's house, and they have to break in there, and it's full of.
I already forgot what I pitched you. They break into the owner of Haribo's house to get this secret gummy bear recipe, and as soon as they break, like, they've got everything, like, they're trying to figure out the layout, the cameras, all the stuff, and as soon as they get in there, they figure out there's just Nazi paraphernalia everywhere because it's owned by a German man. But it's obviously so. It's just Nazi paraphernalia, and they're sneaking around. There's scenes of, like, this guy has, like, this little tiny mustache, and he's combing it, and he's, like, trying on different types of mustache. He's like, "Oh, this one looks so good." And they're just breaking in, and it's basically just, that's my movie.
It could just be, like, that could be a whole series of just heists. It could be heist movies to get the recipes for famous things that nobody else knows the recipe for, like Bush's baked beans, Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola's in a museum in Atlanta, I think, right now.
What's in the secret sauce?
In the secret vault there.
I mean, my favorite part of the whole thing
was the
idea of this, like, this awful, like
it's a, like, it's a harmless thing. We, like, want to get this recipe.
Nazi sympathizer guy trying on cute little false Hitler mustaches.
He's wearing, like, the red armband,
and it's just being, like, so pathetic about it. Like, it like
we cheat Hitler my today, and he's got a little comb over, and they're just like, "What the fuck is happening?" And then they're trying to get this recipe.
Then it changes. They're like, "All right, fuck that guy. We got to get this recipe, but fuck that guy."
Yeah,
and it's.
I think that's actually a really interesting angle, because you have these thieves breaking in, and, like, what if what he was doing was actually straight criminal? Like, you know, they break in and it's like, "Oh man, what the fuck? These guys got enough weapons to start World War III."
And he's got people chained in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
All sorts of weird shit.
Yeah. So you break in and it turns out that the person's, like, really, really. And so then you're like, "Okay, well, shit. Do we go to the police?" But we're breaking into his house. It's the only reason why we know this. Like,
this is also rated R because it's mean. I got to have some fucked up shit in the movie. So,
I mean, Brandon, I don't know how you feel about it, but when you start writing crazy plots, you always surprise and delight me with things like, I never would have thought of that. Like, It's so.
My grammar's terrible. I'm a writer.
But you're an idea person. George Lucas can't direct a fucking movie, but he was an incredible idea person.
Well, I could argue with you on that.
Well, but if you took the prequels as outlines,
that was all of his ideas.
Text outlines on page, and you were able to pull in somebody else. Say, "Well, okay, let's just do this, this, and this. We'll develop these components of it. We'll restructure it like this." Filmmaking is a collaborative process. Writing can be a collaborative process.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is it wasn't a collaborative process,
right,
when he made
it,
know,
wasn't,
the prequels.
But when he made the original films,
oh yeah,
or
because
Willow,
everyone told him his ideas sucked, and then they changed them or told them to make them better, or his wife interceded.
Yes, exactly.
So I think his ideas are terrible. Well, maybe the concept behind everything.
I feel very strongly that George Lucas is an idea guy, is a story guy.
Didn't he take his idea from, like, Japanese films like Kurosawa?
But that's the thing, is that all great creators are siphons or distilleries.
Delicious.
Who combine outside influences to create one greater story. You take all your collective parts and create something unique from it. So yeah, George Lucas sampled heavily from Flash Gordon and Kurosawa films and all kinds of other, like, things that he grew up with, like racing cars in the 1950s and all this stuff, and created Star Wars, which no one had ever seen before. And I mean, even like Janelle Monáe, for example, like she takes all of her influences, like, including George Lucas and Prince and all these different, like, sci-fis and other concepts and other musicians that she loves, and compresses it into an experience that is, you know, you can see reflections of other things in it, but it's also distinctly her own, and it's extremely relevant in this moment in time. So anyway, we're at, like, full episode length now. We haven't talked about Fallout 76
yet. Someone had to talk about their dream for a half an hour.
I'm sorry.
Jeez.
I mean, we all knew that was going to happen.
Jesus. Well, Fallout 76. What can I say that hasn't been said already? No, actually, I've got a whole list of shit I want to talk about, but now my time seems to be limited.
As long as you want.
Do you guys know about the stupid canvas bag controversy?
I do know about the canvas bag.
I don't know anything about it.
So before some people even loaded the game, the people who bought the $200 collector's edition, got a little surprise in their collector's edition. Now, originally, it was supposed to come with some really cool stuff, like a glow-in-the-dark map or something, the T-51B power armor helmet, which was the main prize, some other stuff, but, like, this really cool-looking canvas Vault-Tec bag to hold the power armor helmet. But what these people got after paying $200 was this nylon flappy shit that looks like a $1 bag you can get at the grocery store, like a reusable bag.
Yeah, it looks like the cheapest bag you've ever seen.
And if that was it and they apologized, that would have been fine, but they didn't. There are people on record saying, like, as responses that people have posted saying,
We don't plan on doing anything about it.
That was the prototype. It was too expensive to make. We don't plan on doing anything. And that was their response initially. So when you pay $200 and it says you get this canvas bag and there's a picture saying this is what you get and you don't get that and they don't give you a refund, that's kind of fucked up. And this is before some people even played the game. That's really fucked up.
I mean, I heard, and also there was the information leak.
Yeah.
People who were filing support tickets were seeing like all kinds of information that wasn't theirs being revealed to them.
Yeah. But also, I mean, since seeing this canvas bag controversy, and it's been like a week or two, they have since started refunding people and sending them like better bags and shit now. I mean, I don't care. This is why I don't buy collector's editions.
The last thing I saw was that they were going to actually make the correct bag and start sending them out because people were really starting to complain. If you filed a support ticket with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and getting out your information compromised.
Guys, stop. Yeah. If you buy collector's editions, just stop. You're supporting this bad habit of bullshit of just really shitty products that you don't need and are gonna forget about for like an insane amount of money, $200, and they couldn't give you a canvas bag. Fuck you. The last collector's edition I bought was for Fallout 4, and it was the Pip-Boy, and it's kind of cool, but it's way too big on me, and you gotta put a phone in it, and you gotta load an app, and it's too hard to use with the game, so it's better just to use the in-game menu.
Yeah.
But it was a waste of my time and money. I wish I hadn't have wasted money on that. But the basic idea was so cool. Yeah, it was cool, but just like most things Bethesda does now, which is why the next Elder Scrolls game I'm not looking forward to given their quality lately. But
Brandon, it'll be decades before the next one comes out. So you have plenty of time for them to not even exist or be bought out or switch around or get their shit together.
So before I talk about why I actually enjoy Fallout 76, which is going to be maybe me and John's the only one in the world who like it. I don't even know if John likes it, but a lot of the complaints, Cap, are that there's a lot of game-breaking bugs.
Yeah.
Like main quests that just don't work.
As expected.
It seems like a half-finished game, and I'm like, have you played a Bethesda game before this? They had a 50-gig patch on day one. 50 gigs was the size of the entire game. It basically replaced all of your files. So 50 gigs on day one. Then there's like another patch a few days later. The graphics pretty much look the same as Fallout 4. I don't play it on PC, so maybe it's a lot better.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
It has like the same reused music, the same buggy quests, the same volumetric lighting stuff
that they did not have in Fallout 4.
Well, the same items and weapons, the same. There was a bug exploit in the first week, which got some people to level 80. And I don't know how that's enjoyable running out of level 80s when you're still level 5. And it really just seems like a big expansion to like the previous game. But other than all those things, now if you heard all those things, you understandably have every right to hate this game. If you paid $60 for it and it feels like a half-assed, unfinished expansion of Fallout 4, you would probably be correct. But since I've played it, and I've played it for a lot of time right now, I can accurately judge my feelings on it and my opinions, which might be slightly different from Boar's or anyone else's here. So I have very specific tastes in video games, and this game meets a lot of them. So I actually kind of love this game for as broken as it is.
Uh-huh.
And the reason for that is it takes Fallout New Vegas survival mode is one of my favorite things. It took that, made it a little bit better, and it also took the base building from Fallout 4, which was all right, a little bit buggy. And they made that.
Most people don't like it.
They took that too, and they made it so you can build almost anywhere, as long as it's not within another structure. You can build anywhere on the map, and it's mobile, so you can move it. And that's kind of your hub of survival. And I like that. I like those two things about the game. I also like that they reworked the entire perk and leveling system, and I think it's better than 3 and 4's actual leveling system.
With caveats, of course.
Yeah, well, I like that, you know, the special stat system. They all start at 1. You don't just decide, I want 10 strength at the beginning of the game. They all start at 1, and you equip perks that you get to each thing based on a point system. And you can swap them out whenever you want. And that is amazing. It's a lot more intuitive than the normal Fallout 3 and 4 games.
My problem with it, though, specifically winds up being that I feel like passive things that aren't for fighting should always be active, because I just find it to be obnoxious to have to swap them out. Like, I should just know how to lockpick shit. I shouldn't have to swap out three cards so that I can, you know, put them in.
Like, because it's a trading card based Final Fantasy esque leveling system.
Sort of. I mean, you get, there's basically, you get packs of cards that you open every couple levels, but also if you level a skill, you can choose what card you want.
So and you can level choose strength, a card from another skill set as well.
Yeah, and then and then each card has a certain amount of points, and given how many points you put in your stats, you can equip that card. But I do like that you can unequip them and swap them out.
I think as a community, we need to start getting pissed off when people put collectible card games into everything.
It's not a, it doesn't, it's not like
I
it,
know,
though.
But
it's not
even
a collectible
even
thing.
Now people like them to the point where they're like, oh, you know, it'd be a fun leveling system, collectible card games. You know, like fuck
except,
off.
I mean,
like,
I agree, do something I agree with else. You, but it doesn't really feel like that to me because you're. You're just upgrading stats, and you can choose any card you want. It shows you, like, when you hit level 20, all of these new cards unlock. And so when you click on, like, strength, you get to choose from all the new strength cards. You get to click on one, so and get
oh,
that
you get
one
to
permanently.
Click on it.
And, yeah, and you get it. Sorry, you get it permanently. But so it's not really like there's no way to go out and find more cards, as far as I've seen, or like collect them all.
Yeah, that's sort of thing.
You just level your skill, and then based on that, you get to choose your cards.
Basically, by level 50, they're all available to you. Can you just do whatever the hell you want? But the issue there is that you can't.
Well, except you can't upgrade your stats. Points. Yeah, so you can only equip a certain amount of points to them.
Which goes but back I'm actually having to take off all of my lockpicking cards and my hacking cards because I need more like aggressive, you know, fighting based cards, like increases to rifle damage or.
Well, let's be. I mean, that sounds pretty realistic. I mean, that's how you would do it out in the wasteland.
Yeah,
is,
you just completely forget how to pick a lock.
You're like, oh crap! I don't have where are all my collectible cards that I need to put on so I can pick this lock.
Yeah, I guess
oh,
it's a little
shit,
weird.
That enemy just totally killed me really fast because I didn't have the right cards
in my
slots.
I imagine they've got like a Kamen Rider-esque belt and they have to put the cards in the belt and then like unlock the fruit lock or whatever.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And then
yeah, obviously.
They get the lockpicking juice fills them. And
see, your Pip-Boy, the way that I imagine they would explain it, which they don't, is that your Pip-Boy is like linked to your nervous system and you have to insert these cards and it loads the program into your body.
Oh my god, that's why you survived.
That's
You're actually all freaking robots.
Yeah, you don't know
everything
that. Spoiler
in West
alert.
Virginia really is a robot.
Yeah, so you're a robot. Thanks for ruining it.
Shit.
So my favorite thing about Fallout 76 was that right at the beginning of the game, they let you play on a little computer screen a version of Tapper. the classic video game Tapper,
where you fill a root beer,
yep,
and you pass the glass.
But this one, it's like Nuka-Cola Tapper.
Uh-huh.
You have to catch the glass, get the next customer.
Yeah, I think I spent more than 10 minutes.
I forgot I was playing Fallout 76 for
a minute. And then after I got done playing Tapper, I backed off from the console because somebody was gibbering. Who's in my world? Who I can hear you. Who's in my world?
Because the chat radius. Yeah.
Hello.
Oh my god. Hey. Day one in the beta with the chat was just incredibly fucking horrible.
I don't think you can judge the game based on beta completely, given they start everyone at the same time in the same room.
Well,
and
yeah,
a mess.
No, but it was just a fantastic like happening. Let's say it was just the weirdest damn thing.
But let me just talk about real quick about my favorite things. Why this game is very specific to me. And why I like it. There are two main things that make me like this game and love it, actually. One is there aren't really any NPCs. So in Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, fucking hated all the NPCs. They glitch out all the time. They get stuck in walls. They disappear from your game.
Yeah,
they
instead
get,
of figuring out how to make NPCs, they decided,
they got rid of them.
Screw it, let's just get rid of them.
Yeah, they need to update the system that they've been using for a long time, their engine or whatever. But so there aren't NPCs, but there are. There are no human NPCs, but there are robots. They can still give you quests. You can still barter and trade items and things like that. And they're in one specific spot. So there isn't a quest arrow pointing to nowhere with no person because they've wandered off and slept in a random bed in a town like Fallout 3 or Fallout 4 or giving you random quest missions and then disappearing to build a fucking settlement. So I love that because I hate NPCs. I love them in Fallout 2, 3 and 4. I fucking hate it. And the second thing I love about games is playing solo in an online world. I don't know if I'm the only one who likes that. I love playing online games where I know there are other people there and I can see them, but I like being by myself. But I like knowing there's other people out there because I'm a fucking weirdo.
Well, I mean, I think it is interesting to play an online game that has, you know, other people existing there, but I hate the, like, I could never sustain interest in a World of Warcraft scenario because I want to be able to play the game in a relaxed way and not depend on other people to achieve things.
Yeah, that, I feel the same way. So, you know, the thing that I like about this game is that there's a survival mechanic, obviously, and it's something that I don't think has been done before in an online game where it's just like, it's a survival mechanic where there are other people trying to survive as well. So it's like a post-apocalyptic world where when you do encounter a real human, it's kind of a treat. It's kind of like, oh, what are they doing? Am I going to sit back and watch? Are they going to be hostile towards me?
Right.
Oh, they're fighting all these guys. Should I go in and loot while they're doing it and get the fuck away back to my base?
Which is a pretty authentically wasteland state of mind. Yeah.
And people,
I really hate the way that they handled PvP in it, though.
Oh, well, they've changed it a bit, and I don't know how it was in beta, but people can attack. You get huge buffs against players trying to kill you. They basically can't damage you, and then when they damage you enough, they turn red and you can fight back and then you can damage each other. But
see, I would rather have like a toggle where you go into a PvP free world where nobody can touch you, or everybody is all PvP all the time, because this opt-in crap was really screwing with me. Because if you have a sniper rifle and you're just like, oh, there's a guy, I'm going to go over here and take him out. Your first shot's not going to do anything. Nothing is going to happen until they fire back at you.
So that's true, yeah.
So you can't just have, like, spontaneous PvP. You have to be like, oh, hey, want a PvP? But you can tell because I shot at you. And then they have to fire back, and then it's just stupid. And then they have the upper hand. The second person to engage has the upper hand.
Well, they have ways around that, but also PvP isn't really, the thing is, it's not really encouraged. It exists, but they're geared towards more PvE. But I do love hunting wanted people, because when you become wanted and you can just attack someone's base or steal from them or shoot other people and you become wanted, you can see them as a giant red dot on the map and it says how much like their wanted level is, and they can't see anyone else on the map once they're wanted. And so it's happened to me, but what I like doing is going around with my sniper rifle and trying to just hunt down wanted people around the world.
The way that I like PvP is the way they handled it way back in the day in Ultima Online, where anybody could do damage to you, but if you attacked somebody and you weren't supposed to, there were like laws in the land. So if you attacked somebody and you became a murderer, you would be flagged as a murderer, kind of like they do in Fallout, and everybody could consequence-free attack them.
Yeah, yeah.
But the other side of that isn't happening, where the murderer couldn't attack you at all. Like, I don't know. If there was like safe zones where, you know, people that broke the law weren't welcome or would be killed on sight, stuff
I'm
like
sure
that.
They're going to have to update
it. It would
that
make
soon.
More sense to me. Mm-hmm. But the way that they implemented is like they tried to mesh two different systems together, and that doesn't work.
Yeah, I feel like it shouldn't even be in there. But, like, it had to be in there, but they should probably just have, like, PvP-friendly server modes or something.
Just make a Battle Royale
well,
on there.
Really, the way World of Warcraft happened with Battle for Azeroth is actually a really cool method of PvP, like, opting in and opting out. So, in World of Warcraft now, if you want to PvP, you have to go to your home city, like, the capital city for your faction, and enable war mode. And when you do that, you basically phase into a world where everybody else is opting into PvP.
Yeah.
So anybody that you see, you can kill them. I mean, you don't have to, and they're not necessarily going to kill you. You have perks for opting into that, like you get experience boosts, stuff like that. But otherwise, if that war mode is turned off, you're totally safe from players. So I feel like something like that should have probably just been implemented. So that way, you know, if you're PvPing, you can actually, you know, get the jump on somebody and it's not reality breaking like the current system is.
From what I understand, they decided not to make full-on PvP worlds because, well, they didn't want to have separate instances of worlds that are PvP and non-PvP, but
they could have done it. They just didn't want to.
I guess. They said that I read a few articles that of people complaining they were worried about playing just an online game where people are just constantly killing them and looting them and shooting them. So they designed a world where it's a lot harder to PvP. Now, I'm pretty sure they're going to at some point update it and make their like PvP opt-in worlds, they're going to have to, because people want that. But also, I mean, all of the content that they're going to be adding to this game for life supposedly is free. So if you do find it on a sale, like all the expansions and everything, they're not going to charge like Destiny 2 another $60 game for 8 more hours of content.
Which
bow weapon, a new bow weapon, which I like. So, but other than that, I've just been enjoying the game.
But you're glossing over the fact that they have you can buy atoms.
I've never needed to. Here's the thing. So there are microtransactions.
But that's where they're getting their money.
There's this
point.
So
you say that it's free, but people
I don't see people buying that because, okay, Cap, so there's this point system called Atoms. It's like the in-game currency that you can use for just cosmetic stuff.
Uh-huh.
And
they took the free-to-play route with funding themselves in a secondary stream, basically.
You can buy Atoms to buy things, but I've played enough that I've got so many points that I can just buy shit without using any real money. So I've got like 2,000 Atoms. I can buy anything in the shop. And the challenges reset all the time. So it's like, oh, you killed 50 enemies. You get like 20 Atoms. And it just keeps building up to the point where
they put
thousands.
That in there for, you know, to attract the whales.
True, but nobody needs it. Yeah. It's cosmetic, and you can earn the atoms. Like, it's not like it's a grind to earn the atoms either. I get them all the time just for playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see the point and why they would even make money off of it. And it is stupid. No one should be doing microtransactions this fucking 2018, almost 2019.
Or
a little late to the boat, folks.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of other people also complain about the story, but I think that's a moot fucking point in Fallout games. There hasn't been a good story, in my opinion, there hasn't been a good fucking Fallout story since Fallout 2. Like three.
I just love that your point is, well, you know, the story, you should expect no story from Fallout because it's garbage.
Well, people love Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 because of their stories as well. And people complain.
But that's the opposite of what you just said.
That's what I'm saying. No, what I'm saying is the stories are garbage, but people are complaining that Fallout 3 and 4 had a much better story than Fallout 76. I'm like, no, they're all just kind of driven with a lot of text, and then the NPCs, and then you hit a button at the end and it's anticlimactic, or you shoot someone and then it just ends, and it's not very compelling. I've never been compelled by a Fallout game. The Witcher series is fucking compelling. They wrote good stories, and they get me engaged. What's Bethesda's excuse for every Elder Scrolls game and every Fallout game just not having a story I give a shit about? I'm just going from point A to point B doing this quest for this NPC. Which ending do I want to see? The Brotherhood of Steel? Oh, I did it. The game's over. I'll reload my save and get a different ending. Like, it's not, I don't give a shit about it. So the story's never been a thing for me in Fallout. It's the gameplay and it's how fun it is.
Okay.
And Fallout 76 is amazingly fun to me. You have every reason to hate it. It's not your thing, but I like being in an online game where I can, like, snipe and move around and build bases and things like that. And there's no NPCs. Plus, there's a musket rifle, guys.
Yeah, you have to take time to show.
There's a musket rifle.
Jack off into it.
It's the most powerful gun with the longest range, but every time you reload it, it takes like 10 seconds because you got to like put the little plunger in and put a musket ball in and pour gunpowder in.
Now, speaking of Fallout 76, have you seen the trailer for The Outer Worlds?
No, what's that?
The Outer Worlds is a game that's being developed by the original creators of Fallout and the
Interplay?
And the developers of Fallout New Vegas. And
isn't Interplay dead?
It looks amazing.
Well, that's interesting. Everything you're saying is interesting because, as I understand it, Fallout New Vegas was developed by, help me out here, I'm forgetting.
I can't help
the
you
name
out,
of that studio, which also did The Stick of Truth, the South Park game. Obsidian Entertainment.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Obsidian is made of people from Interplay who worked on Fallout.
Before Interplay
so
went
Obsidian
like bankrupt, yeah.
Obsidian is Interplay, is Fallout, is all the same thing. So yes, this is very rooted in Fallout. Continue.
But it pretty much looks like a combination of Fallout, Borderlands, and maybe even BioShock a little bit.
I'm just looking at screenshots of it,
yeah.
And it looks fucking great. Now
it
I don't
looks
this,
amazing.
This may not this be rendered on something that isn't going to be released, but it looks amazing.
Well, I watched some gameplay video footage from it, and I was like, wow.
It's called Outer Worlds.
Actually looks like something I would play.
Is it
and it's a space game. Interesting.
Is it online or
yeah,
know,
it's
a
little
game?
Bit, you know, kind of like terraforming lands so on other planets, so there's sort of spacey things going on.
So No Man's Sky, but with other stuff happening.
No.
No.
No, more like Fallout on a different planet.
Okay.
Okay, there must be something going on with this game, because it says it's supposed to come out in 2018, and it's December.
Hmm. Well, I don't know about that.
It says originally revealed in 2018, Outer Worlds will be releasing at some point in 2018. What's weird is it's being released on every system, but Obsidian's owned.
I would check
owned
for another source because yeah. that sounds like you've got some.
Maybe. Weird Obsidian's owned by Microsoft now.
Yeah.
And we all love what they did to Bungie.
We're still a ways from launch. We're still a ways away from its 2019 launch window.
2019 mid to late.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that
Cyberpunk
2077 will come out first.
Considering how it just kind of came out of nowhere,
yeah,
that announcement.
No kidding.
Did you know anything about the gameplay mechanics, whether it's online, offline? Like, are they competing?
It's single player.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
I honestly,
it looks
just,
like there's squads. Like, yeah. you meet characters to kind of come along with you, and they don't look completely stupid.
Mm. Well, like I said, I'm enjoying Fallout 76 just because I enjoy it, and it's fun, and it's an online game, and that's all I need out of it to be enjoyable. If I can play a game for 100 hours, it's worth my money.
Well, I mean, regardless of how you feel about the story, Fallout 4 was an enjoyable gameplay experience. So
it was fun. It's just, it's not fun because of the story for me. I like, everything's predictable, and then it just kind of, it's well, bland when you get to the end, and then it just ends.
I feel, yeah, the narratives could be...
It's not epic.
It could be stronger. They're not strong narratives, but it is a lot of flavor. It's a flavor-based game. And that's really what you're absorbing, a flavor that feels like story.
The flavor is mostly rat bits
well,
that have been grilled.
Or when you go to Far Harbor, the succulent taste of Vim Captain's Blend, which is...
I'm upset that I didn't... I'm kicking myself for not playing Far Harbor now, knowing that it's amazing. It's the game Fallout 4 supposedly should have been.
I'm obsessed with Far Harbor.
Cap's favorite game.
Can we talk about how I saw a fucking giant hermit crab in a bus the other day?
Yeah, that's a Far Harbor thing.
Yeah, so
are the gulpers and half a dozen other things from
fucking
the,
honey beasts. Kill me. So in Fallout 76, I was walking on a road just randomly in a swamp, and there's like this just bus sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then a giant fucking hermit crab comes out of the front of the bus, and yep. the whole thing starts walking towards me, and I'm really glad I have a million stealth because I'm hiding as this fucking giant hermit crab in a bus, using it as a shell, is crawling towards me.
How and much just... do you love hiding from scorch beasts?
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about the new enemy. So there's like one new enemy type.
Spoiler: it's a dragon.
Yeah. Well, what? The scorched are a new type of enemy in Fallout 76. They have a hive mind and they're intelligent enough to use guns and doors and things, but they have no speech, kind of like ghouls. So they're ghouls that
well, they
are intelligent.
Say weird things.
Yeah. They're created by these gigantic level 50 bat dragon creatures in the sky that can create more at will.
Secret, Brandon.
What?
Some of them aren't level 50. Some of them are. Hard.
Oh, well, the first 5 minutes in the game, there was one flying in the sky and I had to fucking run to an airport and hide. But they can just annihilate you, give you permanent like radiation mutation effects and just create more scorch. Which they control, I'm imagining. It's part of the plot to figure out where these things came from and why how they're able to create and control these people who have turned into the Scorched. They're human beings that were encased in these like ashes, and then they hatch out at some point and become the Scorched, which I like. That's the most interesting part of the game, really. Mm. But I like that. I like the Scorched enemies. That's all I got with Fallout 76.
Any other thoughts?
You have every right to hate it, but I really enjoy playing it. If you haven't played it, you really don't have the right to hate it. Maybe you do. I don't know.
I played it and I hate it.
Yeah, and you have every right. You tried it.
Yeah.
But John, how do you feel?
I have a great time playing it. I actually play it with human beings on occasion, though admittedly a lot of my time solo. I have shit tons of fun running around. There's a lot of very interesting, like, for starters, the world is like 4 times the size of Fallout 4. I think, it's including all of its expansions.
Wow, yeah, that's substantial.
It's literally nonsensically large, and I only just, like, practically yesterday got most all of the map pretty much fleshed out properly, like, including a lot of, like, the corner areas and that kind of stuff. It's really, like, a fascinating experience. There was a lot of, like, really, really crazy situations a couple weeks back or whatever. I was literally, like, scorch beast everywhere, and I just wound up basically ducking down in these weird caverns that I found just out of nowhere in the Cranberry Bog area underneath like the highway there. It was incredibly fortuitous. So I'm like basically crawling in these caverns created by like, you know, mole rats and shit, like below the highway, and I can just hear the fucking batwing flapping above looking for me. For like, you know, 20 minutes while I'm crawling along this entire way stealthed, like trying to get to
this. And those are the kinds of survival-oriented gaming experiences that I would hope to have from a game like this. That's sort of like the memories, the terrible situations you wouldn't want to be in real life, but you can have a nice, vivid experience like that in a video game.
I mean, if any of this sounds interesting to you, I mean, the game is like half price at this point, so I would give it a go. But if any of this sounds god awful to you, then you stay away. You're probably gonna hate it.
Brandon, have you made it to the cranberry bog?
What the fuck is a cranberry bog?
It's where cranberries grow.
I went to a bog in like the bottom corner of the map, and everything murdered me. There's fucking level 80 Wendigos or some shit, and I'm level 30.
Okay, yeah, you've been to the cranberry bog. Everything's red.
Yes.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think I have to wear a gas mask to not die immediately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that place is a lot of fun. Because you'll be running around, everything will look flat, and then there'll just all of a sudden be like, it'll just drop down into this, I don't even know what the hell you'd call it, like a huge crazy rut, like the land's just divided up like 6 feet down practically. Mm-hmm. And so it just has all these like winding vein-like paths sometimes that go under and up and around, but like it's completely flat and then just like fall into a ditch basically.
I love when there are lizards in the tree, massive lizards the size of people, and then they jump out of the tree.
Those are also from Cap's favorite game.
There's goddamn lizard men?
Really? Oh, see, I didn't play Far Harbor.
Oh, the newt people who squirm on the ground?
Yeah.
Oh, they're so much trouble.
What I'm interested in, though, is what Bethesda is doing sort of more of like a company right now, because like they were like, oh, no, we're never going to not do VR games or something like that. They released, you know, all of their games basically in virtual reality, then kind of back off that. Randomly Fallout 76 comes out, which is a huge experimentation in multiplayer for what was also a single player game. So like doing
it just
a lot
seems
of really
like it seems like
shit.
Fallout. It seems like Fallout 76 is really just like a one giant beta test for a future game they will be making for like the next gen.
Everything they're up to, including their incompetence with the burlap sack or whatever, does really stink of a what's he building in there kind of
situation. It's very corporate, and it doesn't seem like anyone knows what they're doing, or like they're alienating fans doing the dumbest things that no one would ever do in a game. Like, it doesn't make sense.
And like, what the hell is their space game even going to be like with all of these other things, with their attempts at VR, with their attempts
at Obsidian beat them to it apparently.
Oh yeah, are they making that game specifically because they knew Obsidian was doing it?
Well, here's my thought about that.
Probably
when Mass Effect fell from Andromeda, everybody wanted to pick up the slack.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mm. No, that's fair.
I guess so. Also
Destiny.
Ugh. I'd rather play this game than Destiny 2.
I completely 110% agree. It is a much better experience.
I mean,
and it's more fun to play with friends.
The shooting mechanics of Destiny 2 are pretty damn polished, and the graphics are pretty polished.
Yeah, it's a good game.
Does not make it a fun game. It's not fun for me to do the same mission for 100 times something that has one more power to it.
Exactly. The fucking game, it's like, it looks good, it's a fun thing to play for a while, and then it's just literally the same fucking things over and over again. The actual amount of content in it is incredibly shallow. Fallout 76, wow, it's a beta. You know, they totally need to iron out that shit. This is a bad time to release because there's too many fucking holidays. But ultimately, there is an asinine amount of content. And I don't know how many bazillions of hours it'll be before I stop finding new, crazy, weird shit where I'm like, wow, what the hell happened here?
Yeah, oh, and that's worth it for me. I have problems with Microsoft when they bought Bungie, because I loved Bungie games until they were owned by Microsoft, then I hated them, and now they just bought Obsidian. So after this Outer Worlds game, everything that's produced now is going to be made by Microsoft, essentially. And they took Bungie down a horrible path. They took Bungie down a horrible path. I won't play their games anymore, and they're going to do the same thing to Obsidian, and maybe they've even influenced this game. We'll see. They took the best parts out of, like, the Halo series, and I think made it kind of crap. So, but anyway, enough bashing on Microsoft and Bungie and fucking games.
Shall we put a pin in this bitch?
Yeah, let's put a pin in my urethra.
Oh, fun. So we'll see you in 2 weeks with another episode of Nerdy Show. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to hang out with us, do hang out with us on Facebook, on the Nerdy Show Lounge, on the Nerdy Show Discord server, wherever you choose to find us. We are in most places. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.